The Juju Orchestra with a nifty little number called This Is Not a Tango. It's from their 2009 album, Bossa Nova Is Not a Crime. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday. What have you to free your mind of today? That's the question. And feel free to call in at 888-874-4888. A lot is happening in this world. I'm on a hold. I don't know why. Okay. You're hearing me now. Okay, good. Had a little glitch there. You know, I'm coming along in the world of technology. I'm not lost entirely. I'm lost mostly, but not entirely. So we'll start with our calls at 888-874-4888. Harvey from Berkeley, you get us started today.
Hi, Eutrice. How are you?
Hey, I'm okay. How are you doing?
Very good. Wonderful, Eutrice. So I ran into a friend of mine, and I told her, every time I see you, I think of the word plethora. And she said, you know, that means a lot to me. So anyways, I'd like to, last week you spoke about water, our freshwater resources, and I'd like to comment on doing the right thing as far as our freshwater resources are concerned, and all of us can take part. So it turns out that the fossil fuel industry, coal, oil, natural gas, that's methane, and nuclear, are the second largest users of our freshwater resources after agriculture. And they use the water essentially, you know, they burn the coal and the oil and the methane they burn it, and then they turn water to steam, which powers the generators to make electricity. So basically we're using all the fossil fuels to boil water. It's very simple. And nuclear, well, of course, also we know that fracking, to produce methane, fracking. They use all these toxic chemicals, millions and millions of gallons, and they poison our freshwater aquifers. So natural gas, the mining and the fracking for natural gas poisons our water. And nuclear power plants, you know, they have these giant nuclear power plants with these towers, these cooling towers that essentially, you know, these power plants have to use, once again, a lot of water so to cool the nuclear power plants. So they disperse millions of gallons of water vapor into the air, and which accelerates the water cycle, which water is the most potent of natural greenhouse gases. And also, like right here in California, they have the Diablo Canyon nuclear power plant that uses $2.5 billion. In this case, it's seawater, but a lot of nuclear power plants use freshwater. 2.5 billion gallons of water to cool the plant, and if that water isn't available, the plants go into meltdown. So we really have to get past the fossil fuels and their use of water if we want to save our freshwater resources. And one way we can do it is that if you have solar panels, if you put solar panels on the roof of your house, you can use the electricity to perform electrolysis of water. And electrolysis of water breaks water up into its two components, hydrogen and oxygen. And the hydrogen can be put through, that can be stored, and that can be put through a fuel cell to when it recombines with oxygen, it creates electricity. So it could power your home at night, or it could charge up your electric car. They also have hydrogen cars. And right now they're using the methane. They pull hydrogen out of methane. But again, that involves fracking. So if we do a solar-powered electrolysis of water at home, we can avoid all that poisoning of our water. And now there's a form of water harvesting called atmospheric water harvesting. And, you know, they have these things, I'm sure you know about it, like dehumidifiers. Basically, they pull water out of the atmosphere. And so these are sort of fancy dehumidifiers that pull water out of the atmosphere, and you can put that water through filters and use it. And it's kind of an open cycle because the water is used and then it rejoins the atmosphere. So there's the atmospheric harvesting of water, and it can be solar powered off your rooftop to run the water harvesting devices. And then there's the desalination of water from the ocean. They can use solar electricity to desalinize the water. And the byproduct is, of course, clean water and lithium. And it turns out that they're in the process of making saltwater batteries. And also the lithium, you know, you have your lithium ion batteries that are used in cars. Well, that's a component of salt. So the waste lithium or the waste salt from desal plants can be used to make batteries. And we're moving rapidly toward saltwater batteries right now. So they're clean and cheap. And so these are some of the ways that we could preserve our freshwater resources and get away from fossil fuels.
Well, thank you for getting us started in the usual way that you do, which is to pass along a great deal of information. Thank you. Veronica from Delaware, you're on the air.
Peace and blessings. How are you?
Fine, thank you. How about you?
All right. I was sitting here wondering, since, you know, the takedown of Mr. Cosby, I felt like there's been an attack on all of the males. They're giving them, sexual prevention, rape prevention classes on every job throughout the United States now. You know, so I specifically had to have my son. I said, ask, you know, are they any, make sure that they get their promotion or their increase in pay at work, and to ask boss, are there going to be any shootings at the school, and to also, you know, ask them, is Tawana Brawley or Anita Hill going to get any reparations? Well, you know, that's what was on my mind.
Have you revisited the word takedown? Why did you use that word to describe the conviction of Bill Cosby?
I use the word takedown because when they decided that they would, if you take the top guy down, that is in everybody's home and so forth, then it scares everyone else with a PhD or anything else. Every person with a job, you know, if I even say she has a nice dress, they might accuse me of sexual harassment. And I mean, now,
do you disagree that Bill Cosby was found guilty of particular crimes? Because when you say takedown, I wanted to know why you were so deliberate in avoiding the matter that he went on trial. He was put on trial for allegedly committing these crimes. You don't recognize those crimes, or you don't recognize that as legitimate at all?
Well, the reason why I use the word takedown, usually when you are accused of a crime, you go into court and you're sworn in. They actually made a media mockery of having women that had no testimony say all sorts of things to him. They were not sworn in. They had nothing to do with the child. It was supposed to be about Constance, and she introduces her entire family, her aunt, her mother. You know, they're all good buddy buddies. Usually when someone
we're not going to be able to retry the case right now, but I was interested in why you addressed the issue as a takedown rather than as a trial.
I just wanted to know what the distinction was for you. I feel it has been economic sanctions on not just Cosby. I feel that this occurred because of the 90,000 books on Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark that he put into these three schools. I think that is the real reason why Bill Cosby has been taken down. And when I listen to the testimony of these women outside when they were interviewed, they themselves, what the things that they had said, you know, one woman specifically said that in 1969, her mother allowed her to leave and go live with Cosby. She was 18. This is a married man. So in saying some of these things, she described herself as a kept woman. And one said, every time I got an A, he said he would give me $500. And then he did not. I couldn't contact him. I kept calling him. If you're saying this person raped you, why would you keep calling and contacting him? And just, you know, their testimonies, I don't believe it. I really don't.
Well, we cannot, as I said, in this time, we can't retry the case.
Yes, you're right. You're 100% right. He has 3 to 10. And what I am having an issue with is now I get to hear all these women in Washington, D.C. say, oh, I believe you, Tawana Brawley. I believe you, Anita Hill. And where are their reparations for it? You know, I don't see Me Too. I don't see Black Lives Matter. I don't see many of these organizations, the feminists, step up for the Black women that have been raped. You know, I didn't see the monies and so forth. And although the Me Too was started by a Black woman, it has taken over, and it has always turned back to European women. It has become nothing about the Black women that have been rates or overlooked for a promotion on a job and so forth, you know, and all the studies, Harvard, Stanford, Syracuse, they all state that although these people graduated from the same schools, the pay is completely different. When they give the paychecks, that black people are still getting less than their white counterparts or European counterparts.
All right, Veronica, here's what I'm having difficulty with you today, and that is that you mushed all together in one big ball a whole bunch of things that are related, sometimes distantly related, sometimes. So I'm not clear on where you're going topically, because you're putting a whole bunch of things in the mix, and we don't know, I can't discern what is your central point. And this is the job here, to, when you call in, tell us what the point is. You may have 8 different points, but you need to hone in on one specific point and get that said, and then leave the rest for another time.
You're okay? Right.
I'm not trying to discourage you. I'm trying to let you know that one of the things that helps us as listeners is when the speaker is very pointed in making his or her arguments. And this, because I can't respond to you, because to respond to you, I have to raise questions in all these different pots of questions that you have laid out for us. And it's going to be impossible to deal with that in a short span of time. So could I give you a little bit of homework to do?
Yes.
And that is?
I have to write.
Okay. Okay. So pick one point, one really big point that you have, mm-hmm. and make that point, and then raise the issues that support your point, and just deal with that. If you deal with that, that's exactly what it is we want to hear. And then another time you come up with a different point. But today we're all over the place and I can't respond because you've raised at least 8 different topics. They all related in a way, but it's impossible to bring a cogent argument together when the points are so scattered around.
Yes.
Okay. Ma'am. Thank you, though, for calling, and call again so that we can have a meaningful interaction with each other. Jason from Connecticut, you're on the air.
Oh, that was quick. Please don't give me any homework. I'm not interested in it. Please don't give me any homework. I don't want any homework.
Please don't what?
How are you?
I'm okay.
Please don't give me any homework. The volume
Look,
is kind of low.
The homework is
your
for me,
end.
Too. Nobody escapes.
But the technical issue is the volume is very low on your end, just to let you know.
Okay, I have no control over that. But I hope
I understand your team, okay. Your delightful team does. But my trouble is this whole Harvard University claiming or reporting to federal subsidies and the financial loans and grants or whatever they use to fund their academia. That they claimed that Elizabeth Warren was Native American. And because that was their pronouncement, no authentic, validated, real Native American or person of color was included in their alumni or in their tenure for any type of positions that would be deemed qualified to be of a senior teaching assignment. They had a Caucasian woman, let's face it, Elizabeth Warren, be reclassified from Caucasian to Native American, so that Harvard University, Ivy League school, and she is getting a $700,000 or $800,000 salary, would be able to get federal money to subsidize. I think is a valid injustice, and that these type of things are more common than not. Imagine if someone was Native American, a black man or woman or a Latino, have the same credentials, that they will be denied because Harvard University thought it as being ethnically or economically expedient to have Elizabeth Warren as that post to satisfy these quotas. And here we are, the population of the academia, those who are the student body, cry foul and claim there is something called the reverse racism whenever they are, you know, experienced or put into task about that they are not meeting or they have been denied an appointment or a, you know, or either a job or getting into school.
Well, you know, the world of academia, especially in these elite schools, Harvard, Yale, and so forth, it's a major scandal. We'll be talking about it soon because a lot of money is washed through these schools under programs that do not perform, do not do what they promised to do with the money. We have now a lawsuit, as a matter of fact, that started this week with Asians charging Harvard with a kind of reverse racism in the application, in the applications process. So we'll see how that turns out. But Elizabeth Warren is, I think she embarrassed herself and the institution embarrassed itself because they ought to know how these so-called racial designations are obtained. They, you don't get it by submitting a DNA sample. Who cares about your DNA sample? Right. There is a process that has been in place for a long time where each nation, people, I think pejoratively call them tribes. They are not tribes. They are nations. They have their own process of designating membership in their nations. She didn't do that. And in fact, the Cherokee Nation was very offended by the fact that instead of following the known procedure, this has been going on for a long time, of who are your people? And then they trace your lineage that way. But she didn't do that. She decided that she would go, you know, submit a saliva sample or something in a bottle, and then they send back the results, which is why they could not find any direct lineage to the Cherokee Nation. So it is not a function of DNA. It is a function of legitimacy according to each nation's rules. And they do have records. They do keep track of who's who. And they are the ones who admit you into the nation, their respective nations. So it was very insulting, and it was very embarrassing, I think, for a person in academia who professes to have Cherokee lineage. You ought to know what to do. It's not like they don't know what to do. There's a procedure. follow the procedure, and let's see what the ruling is.
The question is...
But then to send it off as a DNA sample, as if that determines your lineage, it doesn't.
May I add, the question remains, will this embarrassment translate into positive reform for Harvard University when they choose those who want to achieve tenure in their senior staff for people who are really of color, black women or black men?
It will not change a thing. Harvard, the thing about these schools is their remarkable success in maintaining the status quo. And they see to it that the status quo is maintained. They're not interested in reforming anything. So don't look for any changes there. For one thing, they will claim it's way too expensive because now people will have to be officially sanctified by the various nations that they're looking for legitimacy from. And it's a long process, and it naturally will be an expensive process, and nobody wants to do that. The other thing is that a lot of foundation money, nonprofit money, so-called philanthropic money is washed through these schools with programs such as this. And it's a major scandal. We'll be talking about it. Thanks so much for calling in, Jason. Thank you. Marie from Baltimore, you're on the air at 888-874-4888.
Good afternoon again, Latrice, and I want to tell you that I listen to you every day. You give out good information, and you have good guests. Going back to a guest you had Tuesday of this week, talking about the Clintons, a while back I spoke to two different Africans from Africa, one a man, one a woman. They were totally unaware about the negative parts of the Clintons. One of them said to me that Washington, D.C., is liked by everyone. And I just thought to myself, amazing. Secondly, another topic, you had a woman who called Thursday of this week about her views about this country, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. There has been much news in the TVs, the radios, and Facebooks probably, and the others, about Khashoggi, I'm not saying his name properly, constantly hour by hour just about. But sadly, not much media coverage about the savage killings of the Palestinians and the Yemenis, I think that's correct, and other fascist killings of others, including in the United States, Police Department number one. I'm not hopeful that things will get better, but worse in the future. And if you have any comments, I'm going to hang up and thank you so much.
Well, hang in there, Marie, so that we could chat a little bit. We tend, when these kinds of issues develop, and we talk about Khashoggi, as it's pronounced, and his disappearance, and now they're trying to find out any evidence at all that would substantiate the claim that not only is he dead, but that he was murdered and brutally murdered. Okay. So that's one subject. I just talked, as a matter of fact, with Veronica from Delaware about it. It is not feasible when you have something so overwhelming for news organizations to leave the subject and go on to other things. They tend to stay with this. This is a major, major, major development and it is unlikely that you would expect that the media organizations would, you know, do a side thing to have a running parallel with some other issue. It is not likely that that would happen. Not in a case like this. When you have major news to report, and this is a major story, it's been going on now for a while, for at least more than 2 weeks now, there are so many parts to the story itself that it consumes attention by the news organizations reporting on it. They're not likely to leave that focal point and go with some other story that doesn't have the same resonance or the same cachet, if you will, as this story. So don't expect it. It's not going to happen. Now, this is where the non-traditional media will come in. And non-traditional media will help us understand the parallels in certain stories. That is the work that we do. We will talk about these things. We would allow you to talk about these things. So, because you see the parallels, the running parallels to it. But in the major media, that's not the way it works. They're very single-minded. When you have a story of this type, every, even smaller stories must be related to the major story. And they will do a lot of coverage, but it in effect is a one-story coverage with several different angles to it. You get what I'm saying? Okay. All right. We'll take this break and then come back to your calls at 888-874-4888 right after this. Listening to these stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. This is our weekly open forum. Nobody is going to screen you and ask you what you're going to talk about. Nothing of the sort. It is free-flowing, a free forum where you introduce the ideas and topics that you think are important or that are important to you, that you'd like to share with others. In so doing, we are creating a community right here on the air on PRN.FM. So the time belongs to you, and I hope that you can recognize the fact that the station makes a strong effort to involve you in what we are doing. We're all doing this together. Ma'at from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Great.
Hello.
To can you hear me?
Yes.
Hello? Yes, great to join the family because I was just waking up here. But first let me just thank the family in terms of just helpful comments. You know, even when I don't always agree, it's so good to hear the opinion. And I'm not sure whether it was Bill, but he helped us with the definition of fascism and said that he calls it hateism. And I think that that is so clarifying, you know. And he also reminded us to be measured and to slow down sometimes with our comments. So just such wonderful, helpful information. But, I want to talk about this situation with what is seems to be the literal torture, dismemberment, and beheading of Khashoggi. Now, as we view the situation, Utrice and family, it literally seems that with the Republicans sort of clapping him on in many respects, that this figure of what's his name, Trump, has now in his latest rally has now brought up Ben Jacobs, who was with The Guardian, and Greg DeFortis, I'm not sure how to say his name right now, but he literally body slammed him, broke his glasses, left him very shaken, and the guy actually had to plead guilty. They tamped it down to a misdemeanor, of course. But the point that I'm trying to make is, as we watched, this guy is becoming more of a Hitler or Mussolini or Franco type figure, and doing it with pride.
Oh yes, but you see, he gets encouragement. He gets encouragement from a party that should be very ashamed and embarrassed to have him as the titular head of the Republican Party. This is really very low class behavior, and apart from everything else, it's very unpresidential to behave this way. And nobody yet that I know of would, except, I correct myself, the American Psychological Association, or the Association of Psychiatrists, who came out and warned this. They issued an assessment of Donald Trump as a warning to the nation.
Duty to warn, yes. Brandy X. Lee, yes, as ahead of that, okay. Yes.
Yes. A duty to warn, saying, early on, not as early as I did, but early enough, that this president should concern all Americans, whether irrespective of your political leanings, because there's something wrong with him. And as you look around, you see how effective he has been in spreading that malfeasance to his family, to his associates, to his advisors. They all are behaving like that.
Mm-hmm. So, and to the Republicans.
Thing is that you see examples of that kind of behavior among Democrats, too. They're taking their cues. Everybody is kind of going for broke on getting money, chasing the money, chasing wealth. We have this African-American gubernatorial candidate in Florida who just got a $2 million infusion in his campaign from this guy Steyer and from George Soros. Now, if it were on the other foot, if the shoe were on the other foot, we would say we should have concerns about big money buying politics. But we're not hearing anything. People are just so thrilled to have an African-American candidate who looks promising, whose future looks promising, with the midterms becoming governor, the first African-American governor of Florida. But I'm concerned about the circumstances. Who is supporting this guy? Where is he getting his money from? And why is he taking it?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Mm-hmm. But we have that going on with Trump. People see what's going on. And they pretend, well, but they're not. They pretend that, oh, well, you know, it's just Trump. This is just, it's just him. He's kind of quirky. No, he's not. He's kind of crazy.
He's dangerous.
And very dangerous.
One last point. I don't know, this idea that the Trump and his administration is going with this idea of a fall guy. Let's take note that it's an African that might be the fall guy. He's a colonel, and I heard a commenter say, well, that's along with their culture, and she should have said along with their racism. And you know, so he's either going to be, if he's not executed, he'd be exiled with his family and extended family. So this situation is just getting more and more dangerous and bizarre, and I'll continue to listen. Love you and love the family.
I want, since you added that point, I want you to take heed of this, and that is don't treat anything related to this case as true. Just wait and see. Do not believe everything about this case, including whether Khashoggi was a journalist. Keep your mind open, because there's a lot more to learn before we even form an opinion about it.
A lot more shoes to drop, in other words.
A lot more shoes to drop, and we will see how it goes. Just keep track and keep current with what is unfolding, but don't commit yourself to believing anything. And then you'll be safe. Thanks, Mahat, for your call. Jeff from New Jersey, how are you today, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm feeling all right. Can't complain.
All right.
Can't complain.
Okay. You can complain. Yeah. Nobody will listen.
Well, they'll listen. They just won't do nothing about it.
That's what I have found.
You know, sometimes when you complain to the right people, you get results. Even the Bible says it. Even the Bible says they'll give you something just to shut you up. But I wanted to call today and talk about dealing in honesty. And we can start with a lot of these things. We heard some people talk about the Me Too movement and this movement, that movement. And to be honest, you know, let's just look at it. The women's rights movement was not about all women's rights. It was about the rights of those who were the wives and daughters of those who were in charge. They had a gripe against their husbands and uncles and all that other stuff. And if we really look at that women's rights movement, I guess that's what I'm going to stay on here. Someone said, one of the Greek sayings is, you know, the man is the head of the family, but the woman is the neck that turns the head. So if you take that philosophy into account, all of these police shootings, the brutalities, the abuses by white men in government, white men in corporations, can be controlled by their women. If their women said, listen, if you don't act right, you don't get nothing. We don't engage with you. We don't lay down with you. We make your life hell until you fix the problem. And guess what? The problem would be fixed if that was the case. However, I see that I don't think that they really want to give up their privilege. I think that a lot of these women who are heading these movements, really wanted to be able to say that they were amazing, you know, to their friends, or their friends will call them amazing for standing up for something that was just, you know, going to be done, made common sense anyway to do. Wasn't a big thing to step out there and say this is, you know, challenge the establishment on something that was done. It was more like, you know what, this is the right thing to do. So I think I'm jumping a little bit, but the main thing is this. People look at what it is. The control of, you know, say the North Dakota pipeline and, I'm losing myself here. Take an honest look at what is going on. It's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump is the monkey out front, right? The honest look is there was a movement back in the George H. Bush days that said we're going to do a new world order. We're going to do a century for a new America. That's who we need to really focus on. Hillary, Barack, things they did in other countries, Syria, Libya. That is not the issue. They were arms of the machine. So if we really take an honest look at these arms of the machine, you will see that those leading Me Too movements, those leading other movements, you know, about the rights of people immigrating into it, so on and so forth. And I'm not saying that that's not a good cause. But what I'm saying is those folks that are usually out front are usually fronting, and they're going to use it to get their to get what they want done.
Well, actually, we're seeing some criticism from inside the movement having to do with exactly what you're talking about the power pull. And by certain people who have high profiles within the Me Too movement. And the question is raised, in the end, do they understand the potential of this movement to change society, or are they so smitten with power? And, you know, a lot of them come from Hollywood where, you know, it's all about me. That supplants the grassroots aspect of the struggle. So even within the Me Too movement, we have people beginning to ask these questions and suggesting that the movement shouldn't go much further without these internal assessments and to correct where they see them going off.
Yeah, I think it's part of that is not necessarily that the people in Hollywood are insincere in what they are really caring about, or those folks sometimes they really care about. I think part of it is the fact that the people in power will not listen to the woman who's the janitor, the woman who's working the line in their factory, the woman who's, you know, even the secretary. They're not going to listen to them. But they will use the high profile so they look. It makes them high profile. We're working with such and such and so on. So I think sometimes the powers that be only allow certain people in. But even you go back to prior to the Me Too movement, when you're talking about women's lib, you know, and you're talking about equal pay and all this other stuff, women on the factory level, women that worked, you know, the 40 hours a week in doing manual labor were getting paid the same as men. They were not, necessarily unless they're duties were mixed as far as what they did, but doing the same job, they got paid the same thing. What it really should have been about is poverty and about class and about the and about that that income. And that's where I think they do see the potential of it. But then again, the women at the top who see the potential of gathering all these women, gathering all these different races, that will actually change their lifestyle.
Well, I'm looking forward to the day when America is not so fractionated and we don't see things strictly from the point of view of women or from strictly the point of view of men, but the point of view of human beings.
People.
What we all need. I mean, a man doesn't need food any more than a woman or a child does. So we have to kind of grow up a little bit, but in the meantime, we have to work with what we've got.
Yes, and I would just say it was one last thing here about Elizabeth Warren labeling herself as a Native American. She fell into the trap. Elizabeth Warren was out there kicking some behind in a lot of ways, which is one of the reasons why I think they moved her from an appointed position to a senator position, so she had to take that oath not to talk against Israel. But now she's putting herself into an embarrassing situation, and she can almost never achieve a higher office. You know, she should have been president before Hillary Clinton, in my opinion. But now that she has put this stain on her record, she took the bait. She took the bait, and they trapped her.
Was it bait, or was this just the way she was thinking? You know, I don't know that she had to be baited into the position that she found herself in. and especially as an academic person, you ought to know. DNA doesn't do a thing to identify your culture or your lineage. It doesn't do anything. That's not how it's done. Not in the Native American nations. That's not the way they operate. And anybody who is Native American knows that.
Yes,
you just don't walk in and say, here are my DNA results. Who cares about your DNA results? Nobody does. But well, could you tell us about your grandfather, your great-grandfather, your grandmother, your great-grandmother? Could you tell us about those people in your life? And are they cataloged in your family? What do you know of the accomplishments of your people going back 10 generations, 12 generations? If you don't have that kind of information, just keep stepping.
Yeah. And some of the Native Americans on the very, very stringent, bloodlines. If you are not, you know, there's a couple of laws up there in for the United States against them, so that they can kind of thin out the tribes and thin out the nations by saying, you know what, if you marry a white man, guess what, your children are no longer, part of the nation. So what they're trying to do is reduce that population in that manner, so that they can then go up there and take their natural resources like they're doing. That's kind of another move.
But I was glad that she learned the lesson so publicly, because she embarrassed herself so publicly. Thanks for calling in, Jeff. Albert from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice. It's great to talk to you again. I'm going to make this concise as I can. And I'm issuing a challenge to your and my audience. One of them is, we've been talking and I've been listening for years to you. I think you're just a real bright star on the horizon here. And it dawned on me, and I've been thinking about this, what is our real problem? First of all, we know, hey, you can forget about the Republican Party. You can forget about the Democratic Party. I don't need to make a lineup about that and how they're helping us. But we have forgotten something, and I remembered it, and I'm going to bring something back to your memory that we're skipping that might really be the answer to our problem. First of all, we're not in a position to do armed conflict against anybody. The way the governments are set up now, that can't work. Dr. King understood that. But there is a remnant of something left over that we have forgotten that nobody's much talking about. One day on a program about 6 months, maybe a year ago, Charles Littell said something very quietly, and he mentioned money and how having money, saving it no matter what. Then it brings me back to what you told me about your mother getting you started on your bank account. Here's the deal. I did an experiment. I said, I'm going to quit spending money. I'm going to see how much I can actually acquire. I went from nothing but a Social Security check. I had a job too, $3,000 in 6 months. And I challenge your audience. I don't care how bad your situation is. You need to tell me. See what you can do to save a dollar. Because the only way that we, at this point in our country, believe me, is going to be able to hurt the situation and get them to listen is through a cutoff of their money. We have no business spending the kinds of monies we do in Starbucks, McDonald's, clothing, whatever it is. If we were to save our money, and even at the end of 6 months, you had a few thousand dollars. Hello?
Yes, I'm hearing the music, which means we're out of time, Albert. I'm sorry, but we have to go. That brings us to the end of our program today. Have a great weekend. Surround yourselves with positive people who add positive dimension to your life. And you'll see you till Monday and start all over again. Bye-bye.